On this week's episode of the Nittany Dispatch, we discuss James Franklin's Tuesday presser ahead of the Indiana game, talk about what went wrong against Ohio State, and preview the Indiana game on this week's episode of the Nittany Dispatch. Hello and welcome to the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauver, Penn State football beat reporter for the Center Daily Times. I am joined, as always, by Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. Audrey,
Happy Tuesday.
3 days. Yeah, it's been 3 days, and I don't know that a ton has changed. We did get some good info today. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great, John. I didn't tell you this yet, but after I dropped you off on Sunday, we returned. I was going to return the rental car, so I was filling up with gas back in State College and stopped to fill up the tank. And my greeting back to town, I was met by a gentleman who said, "Audrey, I'm sorry you had to sit through that yesterday in Columbus." And I just said, "Oh, hey, like, oh, no worries. You know, it all kind of pays the same." And he shared his thoughts with me right there at the gas pump. So to the gentleman at the gas station in Bellefonte, thank you for sharing your thoughts. And I'm with you. He had questions about why didn't they keep using Nick Singleton? And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of how it is. And then I rolled back into my neighborhood, and one of my neighbors, an elderly gentleman, said to me, "Audrey, I don't think I'm going to live to see them beat Ohio State." So it's been bleak,
it's
around
grim,
here, to say the least. Yeah. So happy, yeah, Tuesday.
Yeah, right. And before we get too much further, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, especially on YouTube. Hit that subscribe button down below if you're watching right now. Leave ratings and reviews on Spotify, on Apple. It always helps us out. But
5 stars.
Yeah, that's right. 5 stars always. But no, this was, it's been a strange weekend, right? We were obviously wrong about our predictions. I think we both thought this week, heading into last weekend, that this week would be different and the vibe around the program would be different. But James spoke today for the second time since the game ended, the first since the day of the game. And I thought this was, I've been on the beat for, this is my third season full time, fifth season overall. I thought this was one of the most candid Tuesday pressers that I can remember in my time. Obviously, you've been on the beat even longer. How did you feel about that?
You know, I was going into it, I hoped that he was going to be kind of honest and forthcoming about it. Like, I hoped we weren't going to get, "Hey, we're just here to talk about Indiana." Because quite frankly, John, none of us are here to talk about Indiana.
And none of us did.
None of us asked questions about Indiana. And I think he understands that, right? He understood the magnitude of the Ohio State game and certainly the way it went. I do get to, like, after a game in the news conference, like, I understand it's the, "Hey, he's been off the field 15, 20 minutes." Like, sometimes we get answers that are kind of like a little bit all over the place. And I get that, because you just kind of, you know, had your heart ripped out and you put so much time and energy into these games that sometimes afterward you're left saying, like, "Did he really say that? Did he," you know? And I think there were certainly some of those comments this week. And I think one of the things with James Franklin, and he said it Tuesday, and I think fans have been waiting for him to say it, but basically said, like, "This is all on me. Like, I take all the blame for it." And that's something that he doesn't say very often. And I think maybe it's just because in his mind, it's a foregone conclusion, right? If you lose a game, it's on him. But I think there's at least a very big portion of the fan base that wants to hear that after every loss. And he doesn't always say that. And maybe that's just kind of like an awareness thing. But I do feel like he said that today. He owned that. And, like, I don't know if that's supposed to make people feel any better, but I think it's like that piece of accountability that we didn't hear on Saturday.
Well, and I think, you know, I wonder, I've been thinking about a lot since we left the presser.
This is what 11 hours in a car does to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the last 4 hours since the presser ended, I've been thinking a lot about the way he handled that and what it all means and stuff. And I think part of that accountability is the acknowledgement of, like, he's just going to be here for a while, right? Like, this is, in years past, there has been some, it's been a little up in the air, right? Like, there's been rumors.
Will he, won't he, USC, facilities.
Right.
Yeah, like, this
Florida
is.
Florida State, all of that stuff.
He ain't going anywhere. Like, I think that's.
Yeah, this was, it's an acknowledgement that he's going to be here for a while and taking accountability because of that, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's where, because I've seen a lot of it, and I know that Twitter/X isn't always the best, isn't the most indicative of fans and how they're thinking, but I've seen a lot of that, of, you know, Penn State needs to hire somebody else. Like, did you all just forget about the contract? Like, did we forget that? Because it seems like some people did, right? Like, that's not where they're at. This is still a top 10 team, a damn good team. Yes, there are shortcomings. Yes, 1-9 against Ohio State is not nearly good enough. 3-16 against AP top 10, not nearly good enough. James Franklin addressed that on Tuesday as well, and was asked kind of a big picture question again about 1-9. And he said that, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said that I wish I would have answered that on Saturday, but that he was so focused on the game at that time. But that it is fair to judge him on all of it. He said wins, losses, everything here. Like, it is fair to judge him and his staff on it. And fair or not, John, I mean, we were all going to do it anyway. We've been doing it. I mean, that's the job, right? Like, that's just how this works.
Yeah, but I do think it is important to that he kind of acknowledged it, right? That that this was where he's kind of at mentally too, taking responsibility for what I think, I don't know, not that he hasn't had ownership of the program before, but now that it seems like he's settled into being here, it's like, this is like the final step of taking full ownership of all of it moving forward, because again, he's acknowledging, I think on some level, that this is his now. It officially is his program, right? There's no more, or at least this year, there's no flirting with other programs to try and get other things.
A decade into it, right? Like, this is your moment, James Franklin, to kind of step into it, acknowledge where your program is, acknowledge that there are some shortcomings. And I thought he was as forthcoming as I had hoped he would be in this presser. I mean, I think there were even some things that, and I will say, I mean, you could certainly tell he was exhausted. You could see it in his face. You could hear it in his voice. I don't think he's gotten much sleep since Saturday. And quite frankly, I don't think anybody in the building. Yeah. Like, I think he was not asking for our coffee orders today, but I think there's a lot of coffee and Red Bull going in that building, especially this week. And, you know, I think it's the accountability piece, but it's also the transparency piece, right? And I thought he did a really nice job of grasping that today and, like, understanding that we're not asking about Indiana for a multitude of reasons. One of them being it's not a big game, but also, like, the way things went. John, what, I guess, do you think was the biggest thing you learned today from James Franklin? Because there was a lot. Like, I mean, usually I don't write off of every Tuesday news conference, but this one I did because there was so much to parse through, I thought.
Yeah, same here. Honestly, it's funny, just real quick, on the accountability stuff. He did take accountability, which I think is the right thing to do in a position of leadership. This also doesn't feel like a loss that is, like, totally on him, right? Like, we talked about, like, where all the blame lies and everything. It's still his...
He made the hires. It's his offensive coordinator, yeah.
Yes, totally agree. But the actual of right. the way it played out on Saturday wasn't like, oh, they had a big lead and blew it because, right. you know, maybe...
They tensed up,
Yeah, they tensed up and everything like that. Yeah, this didn't feel like that. This felt different than that. It was a different kind of loss. But I think the biggest thing that I learned today was, like, the acknowledgement of all of the shortcomings on offense, right? Like, he was not, I don't want to say he wasn't pulling punches. It's because it's not like he was attacking players or coaches right. or whatever, but he was being honest and he was being forthright that he said across the board, you know, that it wasn't a good game on offense. He said that the receivers are doing stuff that maybe we don't see. Like, we've talked about in the past on here, like the miscommunication, I think it was against Illinois or North, it had to be Illinois, I think, where Keandre Lambert-Smith runs a comeback route and mm-hmm. Drew Aller throws it mm-hmm. short or throws it as if it's against zone when he saw man. I can't remember exactly what it was. He mentioned something similar, right? When you're running it to 8 yards or you run it to 12 yards when you're supposed to run it to 8 or something like that, right?
Depth,
like,
of route.
Right. And
consistency in practice.
Yeah, and, like, all of this stuff, like, and this was about the receivers specifically, mm-hmm. like, acknowledging, like, this is why no one beyond the top two stepped up. And frankly, we saw that issue with Keandre again against Ohio State, where him and Drew were not on the same page on a comeback route, and both kind of looked a little bit frustrated from the press box. But I think the main thing, though, was he was not exactly defending any aspect of the play calling, right? Like, there was no...
And I think that's very telling.
Yeah, I think that's probably where you're right. It's telling of where things are with him and with Mike Yurcich. He said that they got away essentially from their stuff that they relied
their
on.
Their identity.
That worked well. Yeah, their identity. Yeah, and I followed up.
I just pulled up the question, John, just real quick. You know, he said, because last week so much of what James Franklin said was, you know, this is our identity. We know what it is, blah, blah, blah. And he said on Tuesday, he said, I thought our identity was staying on schedule, converting on third downs, and then either converting on third downs or going for it on fourth down situations. I feel like that had been our identity for the season. Well, that was not what we saw on Saturday, right? And that's an admission of your play calling. And then he also offered up in that sequence, going back to what James Franklin said was one of five or six critical plays in that Ohio State game, which was the third and one in the first quarter. They're around midfield, third and one. They throw the ball. It's incomplete. Penn State looks like they're going to go for it, and they call a timeout. And that's what I had asked him about after the game, like the Drew audible out of that, like what was going on there. And he said, you know, it was a pass call and all of that. Well, he did shed more light on that today, which I appreciated, because what happened
unprompted
was
unprompted too, for what
yes,
it's worth.
Yes. Which I thought was a really good explanation. They called the timeout because they had 12 men on the field that they were going to go for it on fourth down. James Franklin said he liked their fourth down call, which you're going to say that either way, right? Because we don't know what it was. But after burning that timeout, he talked with Manny Diaz and was like, you know what? We just lost the element of surprise right here because we had 12 men on the field. So again, not a great look for the coaching staff, for your personnel groupings. But then, so that's why they punted. So I thought that was, again, you're starting to see more of the full picture of how this thing fell apart.
I also don't agree with that thought process, for what it's worth. I understand it. I don't think
you got to go for it.
I don't think momentum is is at play there. I understand, like, in the heat of the moment, it's obviously different for him on the sidelines. And, you know, maybe
you know what
if
you
I
do
were
there,
in that
John?
Situation, what's that?
The T formation.
Right. Like, or you.
Where
like,
was the T formation? Like, he unprompted mentioned that. Today
we'll go with a tush push, like either like they have a 6'5" 240-pound quarterback, like they've had success with that, and while Ohio State did have the offensive line overmatched athletically, they did not from a physicality standpoint or a power standpoint, and I think they would have won that rep had they run it, which makes it even more shocking that they went away from the whole thing altogether. And like I couldn't believe that they shifted that far from, and he was right, like their identity was X, Y, and Z, and they went to A, B, C instead. And it was really surprising. And you know, we talked about Saturday when I asked him about how he'd evaluate the offensive play calling. He said, you know, about getting away from the run, but he would know more on Sunday when he rewatched everything. Well, he actually went away from that comment about getting away from the run. He didn't think that was the issue. But the quote he gave today, I thought was really interesting. He mentioned the identity again. And you know, the going away from the goal line back and everything. Then he said, I didn't feel like we had been as consistent and as aggressive in certain areas that maybe we had been in the past. Part of that is who we're playing from a talent scheme standpoint, obviously. But yeah, obviously when you're talking about evaluating that, opening drives are a big evaluator of that in terms of game planning and success. Third down is a big indicator for quarterbacks as well as coordinators. Red zone, those things I think are really telling. Yeah, obviously based on the lack of success, it was not a good game for us.
Not great.
Yeah, not great. The third down is a big indicator for quarterbacks as well as coordinators is
one of 16.
Again, it's telling though, like who he I think thinks is at fault here for all of this, because he also said a lot, not as much today, but on Saturday, that like he wasn't really putting a lot on Drew. I didn't think so anyways. Like it didn't sound like he was putting a ton of this on Drew. He didn't say he played a perfect game or anything like that, but my interpretation was that there was other stuff at play that maybe impacted, you know, the passing game. And I think, again, that quote today is pretty telling.
Well, and I think, too, the thing that I asked James Franklin on Tuesday was, okay, we've heard so much about the Bo Prabula package. Why didn't you use it against Ohio State, right? Like, what are you saving it for? Because certainly this offense looked like it was in shambles. And at this point, like, why not try something, anything? Because Jim Knowles and this defense, like, at least hadn't seen this look. And hell, if you're throwing, you know, trick plays to Keandre Lambert-Smith, what's one more at this point, right? And the interesting thing about that was James Franklin did say, which is the first time we've gotten this on the record, that they do have a Bo Prabula package every week. And that sometimes we only see that because it's a blowout, but that it was part of the plan against Ohio State. But that because they were so terrible on third downs, because they were so woeful on third downs that they never got a chance to go to the Prabula package because they never got into a rhythm. But then he did say, he's like, well, yeah, hindsight, maybe we should have tried it on first or second down. And yeah, absolutely. Like, I think that's, again, not a great reflection on your play caller.
Right. And I keep coming back to this, right? I wrote about it after the game. It's I think a crucial part of what we heard today. There's blame to be spread around without a shadow of a doubt. But I keep coming back to that Mike Yurcich kind of was at the center of all of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like was at the center of a lot of the issues that they had, whether it's play design, whether it's play calling, whether it's, you know, decisions to pass or run in certain situations. Like I keep coming back to that being a core issue that was at play on Saturday. And I know, you know, I have a hard time rectifying what they were through six games through what they were in game seven. It's a major disconnect that I have right now. You know, and I kind of can't get past it. And I hope to, you know, it's unfortunate we don't always have access to like all 22 film. I think that would be really helpful with wide receivers.
Or I'm hoping to talk to the offensive coordinator. That would be nice.
Right. Or talking to the guy who's in charge of all of it. And I give a lot of credit, by the way, to Drew Aller for standing there and taking our questions for 10 to 15 minutes. Because again, Penn State doesn't give us coordinators on game day. So the person that had to answer for Mike Yurcich's rough day at the office was 19-year-old Drew Aller. And I don't know. I think that's, and we don't have to go too deep into this because this is maybe a little too inside baseball, but I think that is a major flaw. And I think that the people that should be answering for what goes wrong in a loss are not the teenagers involved in the situation.
Yeah. And that's so much this sport, right? I mean, that's so much of it. And that's been this way here ever since James Franklin's tenure with coordinators. And kind of one of the parallels I made in my story on The Athletic over the weekend was like, yes, there was another Penn State quarterback in tears after a loss to Ohio State answering questions. And yes, we've seen this a lot because it was the same thing after 4th and 5 with Trace McSorley. It was the same thing 2 years ago with Sean Clifford kind of standing there along that long walkway at Ohio Stadium. And it's just how they operate, how they want to do it. But yeah, the coaches, the coordinators, like it would be nice to hear from Mike Yurcich. I think at this point, we probably will not hear from him until maybe early signing period, most likely the bowl media day, maybe for like a few minutes or something like that. And then it's tough because at that point, it's always the questions, and Mike always is very kind of like this with us. It's like, well, I'm only here to talk about this game. And it's like, well, you know what? If we only talk to you a handful of times per year, we have questions beyond this, you know, upcoming bowl game or whatever it may be. So we're still working to get answers to a lot of these questions. But John, do you think anything with this receiving core now that we're 7 games into it? I mean, the fact that we heard all offseason they need guys to step up all spring, all summer, all preseason. Is anything going to change with this receiving core between now and Michigan, like to give fans any glimmer of hope?
I mean, I don't think so, right? Like I kept harping on like Cephas was separating and getting open in games. And I, to be clear, James did not name Dante when he was talking about this stuff. He's saying this is my, what I drew from it. I think if I had to guess one of the players he's talking about with some of those mistakes is probably Cephas, because everything else I think looks good on game day, right? It's the stuff that we can't see. I think that is probably keeping him off the field.
To your point of the kind of the mistakes, and James Franklin said, you know, sometimes it's maybe having too many guys in the same area. I think on the Lambert Smith on the flea flicker play, I believe after that one was when Cephas came off the field and Franklin really lit into him. And I think that maybe is what kind of he was referring to. And again, James Franklin said like, kind of, hey, trust us because we're seeing everything in practice and the consistency piece. But yeah, to me, John, it's concerning because here you are, your receiving core at this point, it is what it is. And I just don't think you are going to get that massive production. James Franklin was asked today if he thinks he has a true number one receiver on this roster. And it was part of a more broad question about the receiving core. And he never specifically answered that first part of the question, which maybe, again, he's tired. Maybe it just kind of went over his head, or maybe there's a reason for that.
I was going to say, I think either he was, and again, reasonably so, tired, or he answered it without answering it. Right. And I think it's one of those two things. And even if he doesn't feel that way, I think it's probably pretty clear that there isn't a number one receiver on this team. We talked a lot about Marvin Harrison Jr. on Saturday and how incredible he is. That isn't what a number one receiver looks like.
Penn State defense Penn State defense caught a stray.
He said they lost track of Harrison, which is true at times.
But like, fair, I mean, but also like,
come on, like that can't. Yeah. I understand, like it. They're evaluating all of it, and that's a piece of it. It's just not a really consequential piece to me. But Harrison isn't a number one receiver. He is the number one receiver in the country. Like, you don't need that guy on your team to be able to win these games. You need a normal number one, right? Like, you need a guy that can go in the first two rounds of the NFL draft reasonably so, like a Chris Godwin type, right, when he was at Penn State. They don't have to be the best receiver in the country or even the conference. They just have to be like one of the three to five best in the conference. And like, those guys aren't on Penn State's roster right now. I don't know if the younger guys will ever be.
I think that's the other question of this, because I think, and you know, something else I wrote on The Athletic, like, again, we're 10 years in, James Franklin's five offensive coordinators in, five receivers coaches in, right? Like, you don't part ways with Taylor Stubblefield unless you think something's going to significantly get better. Well, they did. And now it's like, well, you've got guys who can't get separation. Like, is this receiving core in any better of a spot right now with Marcus Higgins? And it's tough to say because he hasn't been here this long. This is the room that he inherited. But it makes you wonder with all the turnover there, and this is, you know, James Franklin's background, offensive coordinator, wide receivers coach, like, why does it always seem like these are the areas that we have the most questions about when this is like the area that he's most experienced in? Like, to me, and it could just be an anomaly, but to me, it's kind of interesting.
I think it probably is an anomaly. Like, it's just a last 2 years kind of thing. And I think part of it is like maybe some missed evaluations on guys. Part of it is guys not developing like you'd expect them to. And there's all sorts of things at play, especially in a position group that's so big from a numbers standpoint. I do think Caden Saunders has shown himself well when he plays, which that's another one I'm curious as to why he isn't on the field more as the third receiver, especially when he can play the slot and you can move Lambert Smith outside. I think wide receiver has to be priority number one, two, and three this offseason in the transfer portal. I think they need to go get someone that is like the established high-level guy that is leaving a program to get a better opportunity, not because they're not getting playing time, right? Like, it felt like a lot of the guys, like Cephas technically fits that mold. And again, like, I think he's shown himself well when it, like, from our perspective, from the knowing what we can know stuff, I think he's done well. But I think they need to go get a legitimate number one this offseason no matter what.
But John, how do you do that, right? Because everybody wants that. And to me, it's, again, like, it comes down to recruiting and recruiting elite guys at that position. And that's just where there's been shortcomings with this staff. And this isn't just like a 1 or 2 year thing. Like, I think you look at it and you say, okay, like, we're talking about the elite of the elite. They had Justin Shorter and that flamed out and they moved on, right? Like, that was one. They've done a tremendous job with Chris Godwin, with Jahan Dotson. Parker Washington, it was interesting. I don't think we ever got close to really kind of seeing his full potential. Then he gets hurt. But I just think, yeah, Hamler was another good one, like, different skill set for sure. You look at Deshaun Hamilton, they did a nice job with, but you just haven't seen so many of these marquee guys. And of course, you kind of the double dose of pain here for Penn State fans, of course, is that Marvin Harrison Jr., Philadelphia, St. Joe's Prep, and like, he never even considered coming to Penn State, right? Like, they just don't have that pedigree at the position. And how do you do that when you've got Brian Hartline over there, who's just made Ohio State a wide receiver factory? Like, it's just a really difficult position to be in. And it's going to be, hey, you're going to have to develop guys better than some of these other places, which, again, Hartline is like out of this world, one of the best in college football. So that's a tough, really, really tough task. But how do you do that? And I think part of that is you've had so much turnover at that position with the receiving coaches that at some point something has to give there. And I think Saturday was a reflection of that. It was a reflection of all the turnover, the shortcomings on the recruiting trail. Look at Rico Scott at Harrisburg, right? Like, one of the things that stood out to me this summer, a conversation I was having with someone, he's going to Alabama, and part of that was he lost a lot of faith in Penn State that they sent Taylor Stubblefield to recruit him days before Stubblefield was getting fired, right? Like, James Franklin sent this guy to recruit him knowing he was going to fire Stubblefield, you know, that weekend. So that does not give a lot of confidence to the receiver that you're recruiting. So I think all of that has to be examined. But yeah, absolutely, this offseason, you've got to upgrade this receiving core. And theoretically, John, it should be enticing that you have Drew Allard throwing you the ball, but until this offense gets it together, that's not really the bargaining chip that I think many people might think it is.
We take a break from the podcast to tell you about our lovely sponsor, the Voodoo Brewing Company, the State College Pub, located at 201 Elmwood Street here in State College, a place that I'm sure Penn State fans may be wanting to frequent a little bit more right now, Audrey.
They need that one this week. I encourage Penn State fans to get the Voodoo for at least one, probably more beers after this past weekend. You might need to drown your sorrows a little bit. And, John, with the nice weather we've had this week, perfect spot to go grab a beer, sit outside, enjoy the weather before it turns into winter around here.
Yeah, a place, frankly, that you'll see us at. You've mentioned before, liking the Metmosa. I always get, you know, mixed with the Voodoo Love Child, my personal favorite beer there. You know, a place that I go to a lot. You know, they have great service. The vibes are immaculate. You know, it's one of those places you can go sit down by the creek and just enjoy the sunshine, enjoy the fresh air. When it's cold out, you know, with it getting cold, it's going to be fire pit season. So they're going to have
the fire pits down there.
Yeah, keep you nice and warm. Get you that nice little campfire vibe. And even though you're not at home, you can join them at every Tuesday at 6 p.m. for pub trivia, and every Thursday at 6 p.m. for bingo. Again, something that you and I have done in the past with very little success. And I
never won.
I'm beginning to think that, like, I'm just bad at bingo, and I don't know if that's possible, but it does feel true. Of course,
I think the cards might be rigged against me, maybe.
Yeah, right. It's definitely their fault and not mine. Yeah, it's on the card, not me, and for not paying attention enough. But no, you can also visit to get some food from the new Voodoo Kitchen to go with your beer there. But yeah, absolutely a place that we love, somewhere that we frequent often. You know, it is for my money, the best brewery in State College. That is Voodoo Brewing Company, State College Pub, located at 201 Elmwood Street. Oh, and I think we're probably going to be having deeper conversations about the offense in general, this offseason too, than just the player personnel, right? Like, I think.
Do you think anything changes? I'm putting you on the spot.
From what standpoint?
Do you think Mike Yurcich is the offensive coordinator next year?
That's tough. I will. As of now, I would say no. I'm not reporting anything, to be clear. This is my opinion. I think the track record over the last couple of years is, like, the first 2 years, it was like, okay, like, they'll get there, they'll get going. And this year has been kind of, like, it's funny. The first 6 weeks on their own, you can look at and say, okay, this is, like, they're doing what they got to do to win these games. These aren't great opponents. They're fine. It's not a big deal. And then when you get to Ohio State and it looks the same way, it's like, okay, no, this is just who they are. They were playing like that because they kind of can't do anything else on offense. Game 7 to me contextualizes games 1-6 much better, I guess is what I'm saying, right? It makes 1-6 look much worse when 7 is this bad. And I think, you know, this is year 3, right, of Yurcich? This is
2 years
ago. It's a long time to be a coordinator and not hit the highest levels of success, right? Especially in a program like Penn State where the aspiration is elite. And like, as of right now, I would say no. Again, I don't know that for sure.
Yeah.
Like, you don't wish for anyone to get fired from any job.
No.
But this is what it is at this point.
It's a question I got this week in my mailbag that'll go up Wednesday morning at The Athletic. The thing for me, John, is I think you have to see what happens against Michigan. Right. To me, that's the thing. And it's, if it looks this bad again, which quite frankly would be remarkable because it's going to be difficult, I think, for the offense to look this terrible again. I mean, it was just that epically, historically bad. But I do think you have a lot riding on that game, not only for this team, but I think potentially for the coordinator too.
Yes, you are correct. But is there a reason to think it'll look different? Right. You know what I mean? Like,
that is true. Yeah, that is fair.
Like, based on what we know now, I think the expectations are that it'll probably look similar against Michigan. And then now if it does look different, they look great, then no, you should be back next year. And you know what I mean? They will be rolling with a lot of momentum at that point, because if it does look different, they're going to win that game.
Right.
But I don't think it will at this point. And I think that'll probably look pretty similar to Saturday. And even if they somehow win, I don't think it'll be like an offensive showing that does it. It'll be the defense coming up with even bigger moments than it did against Ohio State.
And I think too, fans, because again, this is a hot talking point. You have to remember, I'm not so sure Drew Aller is here if it isn't for Mike Yurcich, right? So you have that layer to this.
I'm pretty sure.
I mean, I got going back to his recruitment, like, that was kind of what drew had told me was, hey, you know, Mike is, that's the relationship that matters most. And it makes sense because that's the guy you're spending the most time with. Yes. As a quarterback, besides, of course, the strength staff. So, again, I think that's something that we'll continue to monitor. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of panic surrounding this team, really just surrounding this offense, I think there's a lot of that. I think it's warranted. One of the questions that I am grappling with this week, John, my colleague Ari Wasserman posed this question on Monday on The Athletic, and I texted Ari right away and I said, hey, I think this is a really good and valid point. And that point is that question, because I don't have the answer to it, although I tried to come up with one, is this right here the ceiling for Penn State? Is the ceiling a team that probably goes 10-2, probably makes another New Year's Six bowl, maybe wins a New Year's Six bowl game? Like, are we living in Penn State's ceiling right now?
So it's a difficult question for a couple of reasons. I actually asked this question after Michigan last year, right? Like, it was is this just who Penn State is now? Mm-hmm. The team that beats who they should and can't get over the top of the teams that are, you know, better than them, which, or on the same level as them, I should say, because it's tough when they are better than you.
Right.
I don't think this is the ceiling, in part because, and this is a large part of the equation, next year changes so much from a playoff standpoint, mm-hmm. that like being this is actually a good outcome next year. You know what I mean? Like finishing 10-2 next year.
Is it, if you get in, you're the 11th seed and you lose in the playoff? Like, is that going
to
change?
I don't think they would be an 11 seed though. I think it's probably like closer to a 7 or 8 seed. Okay, and well, they
say,
win.
Say you're right now, you're ranked 10th, right? So say you get in and you're 10 and you lose, right? Does that change? And I don't know, like, does that change fans' perception? Cause like, it's great to be in the mix, right? Like, to me, that's fine. But we know there's some people are going to view that as national championship or bust. And I just don't think that's the correct way to evaluate this program.
I think being in the mix right now is still a different thing than it is next year, because being in the mix mm-hmm. right now is like being one of the top four teams and you have a chance at winning the title because you're one of the top four teams. Expanding to 12 changes the variance a lot with a playoff system. I mean, we see it in like baseball all the time, right? Like as the playoffs get bigger, it becomes more variable because there are more likelihood for upsets, especially in football when it's a one-off, you know what I mean? It's not a best of three or best of five or whatever. Like, I think once it expands to 12, we will see fewer 1 and 2 seeds being like the definitive at the top. Just because they're going to have to win, you know what I mean, multiple games.
Penn State needs there. That chaos. Like, I think that to me,
yeah, that is right. And I think that chaos like means that they kind of, I don't know that it means that they rise up a level as much as Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State come back a little closer to the pack, because there's so much more required of you to win a title that there's more variability. So I think there is another step for them to take. I think the offense is such a disaster that if you just rectify, like if they have an average offense Saturday, they win. You know, for as awesome as Ohio State's defense is,
maybe, but you've ruffled a lot of feathers with Ohio State people, John. At this point, would you like to apologize? Is there anything you'd like to say? You're doubling down on that.
Like, there were two of the top 3 to 5 defenses in the country playing against each other. I thought Penn State had the better quarterback. I thought Ohio State was better most everywhere else. And we talked about this. If you put Drew Aller on Ohio State, I think Ohio State might win by like 3 touchdowns. You know, I think that I think McCord struggled on some level on Saturday, in part because of the Penn State defense,
I want to revisit that.
He is as a quarterback.
I want to revisit that part because one of the things I've seen a lot of since this weekend is that we as the media have been too easy on Drew Aller, that we haven't given him enough blame for Saturday. You just said right there, you think he's the better quarterback than Kyle McCord. Drew Aller did not look good on Saturday, right? Like, that's stating the obvious. He said as much afterward. He said he sucked and doubled down on that and asked why. And he said, well, because I did, right? Very honest, brutally honest assessment of his play. Now, I think you and I are aligned on this, but I could be wrong. Why are you not, or are we not, assigning more blame to Drew Aller on Saturday?
It's a lot harder to succeed when you're set up to fail. And I think that's all it comes down to.
Like, so what does that mean, John? Let's parse that a little more.
It means Mike Yurcich set him up to fail, right? Like, I wrote about this, you know, you mentioned the anecdote about Drew saying he sucked. Like, he had tears in his eyes and took accountability and everything. And that was my lead to my story, right? That he's sitting here like owning this. And frankly, like, I don't think it was something that he necessarily needed to take ownership of, you know, like I thought he was not good. Play calling did not help him.
And that was, we're aligned on this.
And you notice that like at the end of the game, by the way, when they go tempo, and to be clear, Ohio State backed off, like they were allowing more to happen because they could, and they knew they could still win the game. But when Drew didn't have as much to worry about, right? When the play calling wasn't so overthought mm-hmm. that I think it was like it was early in the game, and like they were just forced to make calls quick and go and go and go. I thought Drew looked really good down that drive as he was able to just kind of go out and make plays. Yeah, I think he was just set up to fail. And I think, you know, that's he should play better, right? Like he was not good by any means, but I don't know of a ton of quarterbacks in their seventh career start that haven't been part of an open offense to this point in their college career. I don't know many that would succeed in the circumstances they were in, especially when the play calling is kind of setting you back time and time and time and time again.
Yeah, the other part of this with the play calling, the run to pass ratio, right? You take out kind of the last two drives, because as you mentioned, John, like it was Ohio State's backing off Penn State. At that point, they're down two possessions. So that was something that James Franklin had mentioned after the game Saturday, that he thought Penn State needed to run the ball more. And he said, but like, let me go back and watch it. Interestingly enough, or at least I think so interestingly enough, on Tuesday, he said that the run pass ratio wasn't as bad as he thought, that he was actually fine, that he did not think they needed to run the ball more. I disagree with that. I think they absolutely needed to run the ball more, especially going back to the sequence where Nick Singleton had the 20-yard run and the 16-yard run. He had three rushes on one drive and only nine in the entire game. Now, I get it. Third downs were a mess, and that's the bigger part of this. So there was no rhythm. But to me, it just felt like Penn State was very committed to this rotation and that it was going to be kind of hell or high water. We're going to give Nick two series, Katron two series, and just keep rotating this thing. Did you take issue, John, with the run pass ratio?
So I actually didn't. I think their timing of running it was really the issue, right? Like I think they should have run less on third and medium. Mm-hmm. And I think they should have run more on, you know,
when you have third and one, maybe. And you know you're going for it on fourth down. Like, honestly, I get it.
I'm okay with throwing on that third down. I think I said this before. I would prefer mm-hmm. to run it twice there, but I would rather take a deep shot on third down than run it on fourth down. They threw it underneath on third down. We don't know what the play call was. We don't know if, you know, it was initially designed to go deep. But yeah, I think it was the timing more than the frequency that I had issue with. Those, I think it was twice they ran on third and six, and Singleton got stuffed on both times. Like they were trying to be unpredictable because too often early on, they were going run, pass, like over and over and over again. And that is like, it's, I don't want to call it old school football. It's like traditional thinking of you run on first down, you run on second.
Are you calling it boomer ball, John? Is that what you're calling this?
No, I'm just saying like you set yourself up to fail because that's what everyone's expecting, right? Like they're expecting you to run on early downs and throw on late downs. And when you do that, you're not giving your quarterback a chance to succeed. And again, that goes back to, you know, the timing of the run calls were not benefiting Drew Aller, right? Like they were not helping Drew succeed. And I think that was my issue more so than the frequency of it. Cause there were times where I was like, oh, they should be running the ball here. There are also times where they ran it and I was like, this really,
they couldn't. Right. No. And to me, my point is Nick Singleton is one of your most explosive, if not the explosive player on your offense. I know we haven't seen that for most of this year, but still, I think in these spots, in these big games, you got to get this guy the ball and try to. And they did try. I mean, there was a pass that Nick dropped where they tried to get something going that way. But I just think it's, again, John, it's that explosive element that they just, this offense cannot figure out. It can't tap into it. They have a very, very nice opportunity this weekend to get right against Indiana.
They better get right against Indiana. This Indiana team is a mess.
I am not concerned about a Penn State snowball effect just because Indiana is that bad. And I know James Franklin was asked about that today and talked about it because we have seen that in the past where the first loss snowballs into the second. But I am not concerned about that. And before I forget, quick update, James Franklin did say he was asked about Chop Robinson. He said that they expect Chop back at some point, that they don't think this is a season-ending injury. Obviously, that was a scary moment. James Franklin did not specifically say what it was, but I think to me, to my untrained eyes, I'm assuming it's a head injury, concussion, something like that, based off of kind of keeping the towel over his head to avoid light, those kinds of things. But it sounds like Robinson is kind of doing as good as possible. So we'll kind of keep an eye on that, on his timeline for return. But John, they don't need him against Indiana. Like, there's that part of it too. You've got some.
No, I don't need that. I don't know that they need much of anyone against Indiana. This is, listen, they fired their offensive coordinator earlier this year. Rod Carey's the new offensive coordinator there, which, who Pat Kraft hired at Temple.
Not James Franklin mentioned that. And I was like, yeah, I don't think you want to really brag about that, the way that kind of went at Temple, right? Was not, yeah. Didn't go too well. But yeah, anyway.
It did not exactly, it didn't go it well.
It's pretty bad, yeah. But he made that link on his own, and he went and he said it. And I was like, yeah, that's not the best, you know, but sure.
Anyway, yeah, that was a tough hire. And not one that worked out well. Mm-mm. But no, I think like Indiana is like really bad. Taven Jackson's their backup quarterback right now. And I thought at the beginning of the year that he would be the starting quarterback for this Indiana team. Brennan Sorsby's the starter right now. He's not particularly good either. Jalen Lucas is a lot of fun, right? He's a kick returner. Yeah. He plays running back. They'll get him the ball out of the backfield. They're trying to get him touches. But mostly just an absolute mess of an offense. Andre Carter is someone James Franklin mentioned as a pass rusher who had some success actually against Ohio State in their first game of the year. But yeah, this was just like, this is the worst team in the Big Ten. I don't want to say that definitively. I'm trying to think, is there anyone I'm forgetting here? But I think it's the worst team in the Big Ten.
I mean, Northwestern is.
Yeah. But, and like, you know, Michigan State's in a bad place right now.
So they're in a very
not
bad
good
place for many reasons.
Yes. But no, I think right now, I think Indiana is the worst team in the Big Ten. The line opened, if I remember correctly, at 27.5. And now I think it's at 31.5. And I still think they're just not giving enough points. Like, if Penn State shut out Iowa 31-0, this game's going to be over pretty quickly.
And it is a noon kick. I will say the first
on CBS. Thing-
Yeah, that's right. Yes, noon on CBS, which is just weird.
Very weird.
This is our new bizarro world that we're living in. But the weather so far looks absolutely beautiful. So I think that's after fans have had some rough go-arounds with rain in Beaver Stadium. Enjoy the weather for this one because it looks really, really delightful. We do know, not that I would ever dare glance ahead, John, to the next opponent. That's why I would never do that. However, Penn State has a more competitive game the following week at Maryland. We do know that that is a 3:30 kick, so which I refer to that as the let's occupy your entire day kick at 3:30.
Yeah, especially in Maryland, it could be a drive, right? Like you could, if it's a noon game, you drive
3 hours and 40 minutes from State College.
Yeah. If it's a night game, you drive out in the morning, but it's a 3:30 game and either – I'm going to be driving home at like midnight or I'm going to be staying a second night in Maryland. So shout out to the schedule makers and time choosers for that. Really, really appreciate it. But no, as far as this weekend goes, like the Indiana defense is probably where they hang their hat. It's just also not good.
Yeah. And they're even like, I think 60th, around 60th nationally. Yeah. I was looking this up in total defense before we started. The offense is like the 120 something in total offense. Like it's
horrendous.
It's really bad.
It's kind of amusing how bad it. Not quite Iowa. I think I said earlier this year on here that I enjoy watching Iowa because it's that bad. It's not quite that bad, but it's kind of close. But no, I think this is it's an Indiana program that's kind of in disarray right now. Tom Allen's buyout's $20 million. If it wasn't, I don't know if he would be coaching right now still. Like it's a total disaster.
It's a wild buyout.
Yeah, but he got the extension after the 2020 season, you know, and so like they have success for that 1 year, and suddenly everything turned sour for them. But yeah, I think this is for as much as you can complain about Penn State and where they're at right now, it can always be worse. And right now it definitely is worse in Bloomington. This is, they're going to overpower them on both sides of the ball. This is not going to be a close game. I don't know how much you've thought about a prediction or even analysis of what this matchup is going to be or what we can, because it's tough because usually we can talk about right now what we can learn about this Penn State team. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I don't know that we're going to learn anything. Maybe there's some stuff you can pick up about Maryland, but I don't know if there's anything you can learn about this team until they play Michigan, right? Like it feels like it's going to be that way for a while. Like you're just kind of biding your time, like till they play an actual top 10 team.
Yeah. No, and then that's the challenging thing, right? Like I refer to these types of games as developmental scrimmages, because that's likely what's going to happen in the second half here. Like we'll be seeing a lot of
might be the second quarter again.
John, you just keep trying to, you know, this offense has plenty of issues to work out. So I think
that's true. Maybe they should take all four quarters this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, that was one of the things James Franklin said with some of the statistics. He's like, well, it's because we haven't had guys play four quarters. Well, you know what? Maybe the offense, maybe this is the week. Cause we've seen how it works out otherwise. Yeah. I do think beyond your frontline guys, your starters, sure, we can look at the rest of the roster. We can say that, yeah, maybe one of those eight wide receivers in that jumbled up mess kind of steps up, or that's somebody that we want to keep an eye on for sure. I think the defensive line rotations, as they get deeper, that gets interesting. But
Chop really, status too on that front.
Yeah, Chop status, and like you don't need him. I have no idea what's going on with JB Nelson. That was not asked about today, I'm sure.
Yeah, that was tomorrow. So strange. He was not on the availability report, and to my recollection, did not play a snap.
Yeah,
I saw him on the sideline.
I don't know if maybe something
he seemed fine at the end of the game when we were down there. Like we were on the field, and like he seemed fine. Like I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm not like doing an evaluation down there based on that. But like, still, like he seemed like
John Saber, MD.
Yeah, right. I'm sure that would go really well. But no, it was he was on the availability report.
Yeah, that's definitely going to get asked about on Wednesday. Because I think that's again something you kind of keep an eye on, the tackle spot moving forward, right? Because Olu Fashanu, we all know everyone in their right mind, this is going to be the last go around. So we've seen plenty of Drew Shelton, but I think you kind of want to get more eyeballs on him, right? And that was last year at Indiana where Shelton made that surprise start, and that was kind of like, oh my God, how is this true freshman starting? So it's a little bit of a full circle moment, I think, for him. And then I think you have to wonder too, how does this entire team respond, right? Because we haven't seen Drew Aller come back after a loss before at Penn State. We don't know as the starter how that kind of goes. I think there's a lot of conversations, I would imagine, happening behind the scenes in the Lash building this week where it's saying, hey, the defense, like, can't be pointing fingers at the offense, even though you certainly played good enough to win that game at Ohio State. So I think you have to kind of worry about the cohesion a little bit there and the leadership on this team and who takes the reins, because that was such a big storyline this offseason. And I think guys like Theo Johnson really kind of have to right the ship here and kind of figure this thing out. But maybe a little bit in the weeds here, John, but who's the punt returner this week?
I mean, I would have to guess it's Hardy. He owned the mistake afterward. Like
he owned the mistake, but do you give Saunders another shot? I mean, keep in mind, I think two returns, it was against UMass.
Because I think given what happened, he made the right decision, right? Like he thought he was tracking the ball. He thought he was under it. It turned, and instead of trying to catch the ball and potentially muffing it, he just let it go. Which if those are your two options where it's a potential muff or let it go, to me, let it go 100 times out of 100. It's much easier to make up 25 yards on offense than it is to get the ball back when that team has the ball midfield.
Is right? it like, with this offense, John? Is it?
Well, that's actually a good point. I think broadly speaking, in the sport of football, that is true. But no, I think it's Daquan Hardy. I think he's earned it at this point. Maybe they split guys. I don't know, but I think it should be Hardy.
Yeah, I the thing I'll be looking at are kind of the substitution patterns. And I want to see some more of these younger linebackers, right? An extended look at Tony Rojas. We've heard a lot, seen a good bit from guys in the secondary like Elliot Washington, right? And so, again, to me, this is one of those games where you're going to see presumably some of the freshmen maybe that we even haven't seen before. Jameel Lyons is kind of back in the fold now at defensive end, so he's another guy to kind of keep an eye on. But, yeah, this is going to take, I think, John, the developmental scrimmage tone in the probably for sure the fourth quarter. I would think the third as well. I'm going to go Penn State 45, Indiana 3. I say that and I just thought, shit, I'm giving them 45 after what I saw this past week. And I,
This Indiana team's really bad, much. Though. Take solace in how bad it is.
I think that's what I need to remind myself of. Now, do we see any explosive plays?
Yeah, I think it's I don't think it's anything that makes you feel better about the offense,
yeah.
Because I think it's just a product of they're just, you know, a superior team. But mm-hmm. for as, you know, frustrating as the offense is, their offense is still a lot better than Indiana's defense. And so I think, you know, I've gone back and forth on this. I think they're going to cover that 31.5 pretty easily. Since you said 45-3,
are they, John?
A little bit. I will go 49-3 and, or 49-0, excuse me, and say they get another shutout and that helps get some of the momentum back. I just don't think this Indiana team is good enough to score. The caveat is if Jalen Lucas gets in the open mm-hmm. field, he will score. He's very good. He's very fun. But yeah, I think the things I'm watching here, it's just the wide receivers at this point, right? And like, it's tough to even draw a lot from the play calling because it's kind of a no wrong answer situation against a team like Indiana right now. If they find some wrong answers, and then we'll be talking about the play calling again. But I think I'm watching these receivers, even the top two, you know, you want to see them play well against a team like this to help with confidence for the whole offense. But everyone beyond Keandre Lambert-Smith and Harrison Wallace III, like I want to see how those guys do. I want to see someone show something. If you're rooting for Penn State, you should be rooting for one of those guys to do something big. I think it's going to be crucial for them that they get one of those guys to show up at some point and prove just to be the guy. Like I said earlier, don't have a ton of faith that they're going to do that and that Penn State's going to have that third option at their disposal. But I still think it's the thing that needs to be focused on most right now.
And you know what, John? You know what I think we see return? The T formation.
Listen, this feels like a situation
putting the T in get right game.
Yeah, they're going to have to run that thing back a few times just to prove, like, hey, we promise we're going to do it again.
It's here. It's here to stay, guys. Yeah.
This is going to be the best part is we don't have to drive to Bloomington.
Not this time.
It's not a fun drive, especially after a long weekend in Columbus. So, but no, this is like there will be stuff to monitor. It is going to be interesting to see how they respond emotionally. Like I said, a little tougher to learn about this team schematically, but you can learn about the confidence and the bounce back ability, which I think is important. But again, against a really bad team, shouldn't be that difficult. I think that's a good place to leave it right now. We've covered a lot of ground today. As always, you can rate, review, subscribe, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. It all helps out. You can follow Audrey covering Penn State at The Athletic, me at the Seven Daily Times. Until next time, thank you for watching the Nittany Dispatch. Talk to you soon.